Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You're listening to Bell and Sperling. Afternoon, everybody. Something we touched on yesterday that I did want to just mention today was obviously the amazing free kick from Lionel Messi. And we ran a poll yesterday. Who's the greatest free kick taker, Lionel Messi or David Beckham? And at the moment, David Beckham was absolutely annihilating the little Lionel fella. Greatest free kick taker, John, out of Beckham and Messi for you?
No, I think Beckham.
Got to be in it. Got to be Beckham. Not footballer, but just the free kick taker. We're going to be talking to Alex Hode, sports journalist, previewing the weekend's fixtures, talking a little bit about snooker, even though Ronnie's out of it. But Ryan Butler is coming on to have a little chat about the semi-finals. Charlotte Long from Entertainment News going to be talking about the entertainment this weekend. And George Moncur, Johnny Moncur's son, Luton Town player, is going to join us, hopefully. We try to get him a few times, but he's going to join us. He's normally training, so we try to phone him whilst he's training. But there you go. And we've obviously been talking about the knife crime, the budget of $7 million. $7 million has been spent clearing up the Eco Warriors, you know, and that's half of the knife crime budget. Can you believe it? Half. We've only got 14 or 15 million to spend on knife crime budget. Is that ring true to anybody? Surely. That's mental. And obviously the local elections last night, it all went wrong for everybody. Where's it going? Is this just a protest vote? Are we just protesting about our main parties, the Tories and Labour? And when it comes to a general election, will we just go back and vote for the ones that we normally vote for? It doesn't seem like anybody is really a front runner in any of it. Anyway, lots of fixtures coming up over the weekend. And it's a real title race now. There's some really important games. We're now joined by Alex Hode, sports journalist, previewing the weekend's fixtures. Alex, what's the game that stands out for you?
Oh, blimey. wow. Good afternoon, guys. Do you know what? I'm going to say Spurs Bournemouth, because I have absolutely, literally no idea quite what's going to happen with that one. I know there are bigger games in terms of the title deciders and the relegation deciders, but the race for the top four is actually quite interesting. And to be honest, Spurs are so thin on the ground in terms of numbers. They need the points to actually try and seal the top four place. But they've also got a massive game looming in Amsterdam next week in the Champions League. I just have absolutely no idea. It could be a team of under-18s. It could be walking wounded. Bournemouth might show up. They might be on the beach. I don't know. I'm really intrigued to see. That's a Saturday lunchtime game.
It's a tough one for Spurs, really. It's an away game. It's the early kickoff. Do we know, is there any inkling of any team news? Obviously, I'm thinking Son's going to play.
You would imagine Son will play, simply because I think they're gonna have to play Son. I think we'll see Vincent Janssen, the forgotten man, will probably have to feature as well. I'd be very surprised if Llorente got another start, given his exploits in midweek in the Champions League.
Did you not think he played well then, Alex?
I think he actually did. I know a lot of Spurs fans, they love to moan about Llorente. I thought he did very well. In terms of what you want from him, he's never going to be running off the shoulder of the last man. He held the ball up well. He brought other people into it, and he grew into the game. Second half, he was very important in terms of trying to keep Spurs in the Ajax half. I think he did all right. He couldn't ask for a lot more. And Moura and Llorente weren't the problem for Spurs by any means on Tuesday night. There were plenty of others. It was a slow start that I think that did for them in the most part.
Yeah, I thought Llorente held the ball up well. I thought it was one of his best games for Spurs.
Yeah.
Because I think he's just a bit of a big lump sometimes, and he don't really do a lot. But I thought it was one of his better games, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, listen, Spurs have lost the last five away games in the Premier League, which is unthinkable, really, if you think they're still sitting third somehow. And Bournemouth are pretty appalling at home. I think 2 points out of the last five or six games as well. It could be one of these that a draw would probably suit both teams. I think Spurs probably, 3 points would definitely wrap it up. Yeah. I think maybe a point might, it will go a long way. They've got Everton on the last game. I could see a point probably Spurs would take that now, given the fact, and just no more injuries. That's the most important thing for them. If any of the first team players are involved, no more injuries with Wednesday looming.
West Ham, Southampton. Now, West Ham, are they going to be basking in the glory of their win over Spurs?
I think probably so. I think that would give them a nice little lift because they were in a pretty bad form before that. And it was obviously a big game and they did very well, rose to the occasion and got the points deserved to win it as well. And this is a funny one. Two teams, not a massive amount to play for. It could be a real entertaining 3-3 thriller, or it could be a door 0-0. Just get us on the beach, lift, get us out to Crete or wherever they're going, summer on their lads' holidays. I don't know. It will be interesting to see. I know there's places for Sikh, the kind of the 11th to 15th. There's £1 million worth of prize money for every place you can jump up, and there's not a lot of points between them. So, a win is important financially for the clubs. I'm sure the chairman will want to win it, but whether the players have got enough in the tank at this stage of a very long season, I'm not sure.
Do you know what? Like Johnny said, it was West Ham's cup final last Saturday. We put our heart and soul into it, and we won it. And I think that was probably the only game we had left to play for to get that record of beating Spurs, the first club to win at their home stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and then set the tone for Ajax to do exactly the same thing a few days later as well. I think West Ham fans based a lot on that. Is it a good season? It probably actually is now, given the way it started and the way it's finishing. It probably is a success. Yeah. If Spurs had won it 4-0, I think the West Ham fans would be saying a lot different.
Well, we had our old mate Russ Williams on the show, and he said he knew before the game that West Ham were going to win because he looked at the badges and he saw two hammers, nice and strong, and he looked at the Spurs badge and he saw a chicken sitting on top of a beach ball.
Well, that is one way of looking at it. Definitely, yeah. I think a lot of people did think that it might be coming just because of Spurs has just had such a big game looming as well, and West Ham always turn it on for Spurs. It's just the way, and it's the game's in the history books. No one can ever take it away from them.
Yeah, they do always hammer us, if you pardon the pun.
Yeah.
Liverpool, Newcastle. Now, Liverpool, are they going to be a little bit dented by what happened to them the other night?
I think probably they would be. The most important job for Jurgen Klopp this week is to make sure that they channel that into something positive. Because, listen, they are most certainly the outsiders now in the Champions League. 3-0 is a massive deficit. I don't think many people would back them to get through that tie. And so they can go into the final week of the league season in first place. If they were to just be able to get through the Newcastle game, it's a tricky game. Yeah. It's not one that they'd have probably hand-picked anyway to play. There's the Rafa Benitez thing can work for or against them. I think the a lot of people say, he will just roll over because he loves Liverpool so much and he's red forever. But I'm not sure. His teams are always very well organised. He's not the one out there putting in the shift in midfield and marking at corners and stuff. The players are professionals. They'll want to turn up and do it on TV. It's a big Saturday night game as well. Mm. The Newcastle fans will definitely want to cause a scene, and it won't be easy. The dream scenario for me, of course, and for every real football neutral fan, would be Liverpool to draw and then City to lose on Monday. So then you've got two teams level on point.
Wow.
Yeah, all down to goal difference on the last day.
That would be good. But do you think after the game with Liverpool, do you think that he's just, Klopp's took him into the dressing room and said, "Look, boys, we ain't got this, have we? We're obviously going to get stuffed second leg. Let's go. Let's concentrate on winning the league." You know, do you think in some areas that's what he said?
I think to an extent. Let's put it this way: I don't think he's going to be resting anyone in the Newcastle game with half an eye on the Barcelona game. He's going to be full strength, all guns, no in glory, trying to win that game against Newcastle. And Liverpool played really well the other night. I think they do consider themselves half done by it. It's all about taking your chances when they come along, and they did not do it, and Barcelona did do it. It was never really a 3-0 game, and so they can, if they can channel that disappointment and try and put that right, take every chance. You could see a bounce back, definitely a few goals, and that would set them up nicely for the last couple of games. And then who knows? It would be a bonus game for them, really, as a Tuesday, the Barcelona game. That would be a bonus if they can win against Newcastle. But it's very much one game at a time for the last 10 days of the season. It's all you can do.
Yeah, I said the same. I said Liverpool, I thought were outstanding and lost 3-0. How does that work?
It's one player, isn't it?
It's very, very small margins. At the very highest end of elite football, it is such small margins. And a couple of little... It wasn't even mistakes. It was little slight... errors in judgment in terms of the tactics and the discipline of the tactics in force. I think Fabinho kind of lost Messi for a little bit for the second goal, and then Messi marched through and set up Suarez. There are little tiny things that make a difference in games of that calibre. And then the width of a post, if it goes in or if it stays out, it is very small margins, and Liverpool were on the wrong end of it. And they will feel bitterly disappointed because it's all been there for them. And then if they end up not winning the Champions League, or not getting to the final of the Champions League and not winning the league, then I'm not sure where they go from there.
Yeah. What about what Rio said about Dick Van Dijk at the back? that he should have got closer to Suarez. But like I said to a Liverpool journalist yesterday, you know how good Suarez is. You know he's the timing of his runs, but maybe Dick Van Dijk could have got a little bit closer to him, couldn't he?
He's had a bit of a torrid time. He's only played at the Nou Camp twice, Van Dijk, and conceded 9 goals in those 2 games. The other one was Celtic, who got thrashed there. And do you know what? He's been an outstanding player all season, player of the year, and the big reason why Liverpool have done as well as they have. But I think it's a mark of respect sometimes. You give players too much space because you know they can hurt you. And yes, if you're picking holes, if you're analysing it a little bit harshly, yes, he probably should have been tighter. But if you get too tight to these players and you get too tight to Messi, he'll roll you in a heartbeat and be on the wrong side of you. And you just wonder what has just happened to me in the last 0.5 seconds. It's incredibly difficult against these are world-class, superhuman players. And getting anywhere near them is a result. So, yeah, you can look at it harshly on Van Dijk, but I'm not sure. They have found a way through, I'm sure, anyway. That forward line is absolutely potent. And Liverpool will be hoping their own forward line can do the business on Tuesday night.
Before John runs on with the other ones, Alex, just we did a poll yesterday. Greatest free kick taker out of Lionel Messi and David Beckham. At first, I was laughed out of the room by Ian Stone and the Comedy Breakfast, but I still, you know, David Beckham... the most revolutionary free kick taker, but who would you say out of the two?
The thing is, David Beckham, it was, as you say, it was a revolution. He kind of set the tone for it. I think the thing with Messi is that he hits it, he can hit it in a number of different ways. You can see him curling inside the angle of post and bar. You can see him absolutely lamping them as well. That one the other day was very much like a Gascoigne one from 91. It was curling, but it was the power of in the side foot. I don't know how you physically can kick it that hard with that much curling precision.
It's a bit of instep on it, definitely a bit.
Yeah.
Whereas Beck's used to sort of plant his left foot so close to the ball and almost drag his right foot over the top of the ball, but I think the rotation of his—I'm getting a bit technical here—but the rotation of his left arm, he had a big left arm up in the air to get the rotation with his body to whip his foot.
Yeah, and the whip. Yeah,
you know,
that was it. Though it was great to watch. It's like saying, what's better, music or art? It's just enjoyable to watch, and we all enjoy it. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Alex, I'd like to talk about. There's a few more games, but I'm afraid we've run out of time. We've got to go to a break. Alex Hoad there. We're talking about the games tomorrow.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You listen to Bell and Sperling. We're going to carry on going through the fixtures that are coming up this weekend. It's huge now. It's huge this weekend. Really, Liverpool are sort of, that is going to be some sort of battle at Newcastle.
It will.
It's a worry.
Off the pitch, that is.
Off the pitch, yeah. Anyone has a battle at Newcastle. it's going to be tough them going there.
Unless you go out.
Well, it'll be nice, not nice in Newcastle.
Love it going out in Newcastle.
That's a great time, isn't it?
Times we can't talk about.
Yeah, knees up Mother Brown, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
was that her name?
We played a game at Newcastle, a celebrity football match.
You didn't have your knees up, did you?
I didn't have my knees up Mother Brown. In fact, I got injured at that one.
I'm not surprised.
I broke my rib.
Yeah.
In game.
What was that? Oh, the game.
In the game, yeah.
Yeah.
Judd Trump, many people's favourite. Just switching to snooker. Okay, with snooker, loopy nuts are we. Judd Trump, many people's favourite, is currently tied after the first session of his semi-final in the World Snooker Championships in a tournament that has lost some big names coming up the final stages. Could it be the year of the underdog, Ryan Butler, journalist for Seven Sport, joins us now. Ryan, we were saying earlier, has this gone a little bit sort of an anti-climax that Ronnie went out in the first round?
I think so. I think with modern snooker nowadays that people do turn up to watch Ronnie, and to get knocked out in the first round by someone who's not even a pro, it's pretty shocking, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, we watched, obviously, Cahill. We were really surprised. So Cahill was an amateur and beat him in the first round.
Yeah.
And got 30 grand to get through for the second. Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, it's a big wad for him to get in. You know, it's the scalp of beating Ronnie O'Sullivan. Everyone, that's just the one to beat every tournament.
Yeah. He can dine out on that for the rest of his life. Even if he never hits another ball, I'll knock Ronnie O'Sullivan out in the first round.
Ronnie O'Sullivan out when he's favourite to win a tournament. You know, you must have been playing all right, to put it that way.
But he didn't look too good, though, did he? I mean, Ronnie wasn't looking at his best, let's put it that way.
It's like when you see Ronaldo, Messi, you know, the masters of their craft. You know, if they're not completely 100% of their game, they're there for the taking, unfortunately.
And yeah.
He'll come back and you imagine he'll go and beat someone 10-0 next time.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Well, and so Cahill went on to play Maguire. I did watch that. It went down to the last frame, didn't he? And Maguire got through. But what would he have got if he'd have got into the next round? Obviously, he got 30 grand. What would Cahill got getting into
I'm not too sure, but you're probably looking at about 50 into the next stage. You know, the further you go, the prize money sort of puts you in your eyes light up and you want it a bit more.
Yeah.
But Maguire is a seasoned veteran. I'm not surprised that he probably ground him out just through experience alone.
He did. I mean, I watched it, obviously. So he lost the last frame. It was 12-all and Cahill lost the last frame. So that last frame cost him 20 grand to get to the 50. A bit powerful for a young amateur.
But then at the same time, he's got 30 grand that he probably didn't expect to even get in the first place.
Yes, agreed. I did watch Maguire, though, and you just said he ground him out. Quite tediously boring to watch, wasn't he?
I do quite like Maguire as an individual, but yeah, he's one of those methodical players that, you know, doesn't show a lot of emotion. Not to say he doesn't show a lot of character, it's probably a bit harsh, but it's the kind. He's not there for a good time, he's there to win the game.
Yeah, agreed.
You have to admire it, I suppose.
Talk to us about Judd Trump. He's tied 4-all with a qualifier with Gary Wilson after the first session. In the semi-final with Sheffield. Judd Trump, he would look favourite for that, wouldn't he?
He is going to be the favourite for the whole tournament now. I watched it from the very beginning last night, and you kind of expected Trump to you know, turn up and have it all his own way, but credit to Wilson. Missed pink in the first, Judd Trump ended up clearing up, and you know, it's sort of the worst possible start. But then a 140 from Gary Wilson. I mean, if that's Ronnie playing that, he's getting a standing ovation. The cue control was absolutely superb. And he's matched him blow for blow so far. So it's interesting to see what happens this afternoon.
Yeah. And what about, Higgins, what's the story with Higgins? Because we were talking about some of the old names that don't really sort of hang around anymore. He's about the last of them, isn't he?
He has gone under the radar this year. I think where everyone's expecting Ronnie, then Neil Robertson, then Judd Trump now to just almost run away with it. He slipped under the radar, but so far, David Gilbert, to be fair to him, I mean, this guy, he's threatened doing this for a few years. And, you know, he's currently leading 8-4, I believe.
Yeah.
So to come in overnight, 5-3 up, win the first mini session 3-1, I mean, Higgins is the best match player left, probably. But he's not having it all his own way. He's going to have to put a comeback out of somewhere.
Yeah.
Who of this tournament's had the best, someone that we haven't heard before, who's come through the ranks? Who's going to be a big name, would you say?
I do like David Gilbert. He's got himself up to 16th in the world currently. He's a player that's been on the tour for a while now, so he is known. And, you know, the World Championship, you see the likes of Stuart Bingham won it in 2015 in his 40s. Barry Hawkins has come through, got to a final as well. So it allows for the mid-pack players, so to speak, to, you know, get to the final, give it a go, and see where they go from there.
What's happened to Peter Ebdon?
He made a record once, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He did make a record, didn't he?
Yes.
I'm right about that. Yeah.
Longest frames ever, and just gets a bit drawn out, has to qualify for everything now. It's just a bit too long of a game for him, I think.
He's not too old. How old's Ebden now?
I'm not too sure, but it's like in football, you have like Iker Casillas. He's obviously, knowing what's happened with him this week,
yeah.
You read how old he is and think, Christ, I remember when he was coming through, I was about 8.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's frightening that people have such long careers now in sport, and it's all about the longevity.
Well, we had Willie Fong on the Balanced Berlin show a few weeks back, and he was sort of saying that it gets to a point where just your focus goes, and you still strike the still cue okay, but your focus goes, the practice goes, and that's why I think we're all pretty surprised that Ronnie is still there. It's like Johnny just said, it's like he couldn't be bothered on the first game. He was yawning, scratching his armpits. It's like he didn't want to be there. And I think
you've got to think
when he's focused, he could win it easily, surely.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's part of the Ronnie O'Sullivan enigma at the moment. He doesn't go to every tour event. He doesn't appear in every tournament, and it's something that he's criticised for. But when he's had a career like he's had, he's almost earned that right. But then you get some of the guys out there, they're playing snooker nearly every single day of the year. And it's a mentality thing as well. It's such a mental game. You have to be switched on from the start, otherwise your opponent takes you. And unfortunately, not everyone can hack it for long periods of time.
Yeah. Oh, but we were saying the other day, me and Johnny have been watching a little bit this IPL, this Indian cricket.
Yeah.
And it's made it, and I was speaking to Ronnie Irani about it last night at an award ceremony, and it's made it exciting. You know, the bells light up when the ball hits the bells. They wear mad outfits.
It's like when my bells light up.
As they have done past 2 days.
I'm glad you're back on the show. I'm glad
Christmas
you're all right.
Tree.
What can we do to make snooker a bit more exciting?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. They've tried to do new things to it. You've got the shootout competition where it's one frame. You get some random winners there from anywhere in the ranking order. But it's hard with a game like snooker because how do you make snooker sexy?
Yeah, that's quite true. Yeah. less reds, isn't it? Less reds. Let's get to the colours.
I think you're right.
They've got the short format already. They've got everything. It ends up just being pool, effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's loads of snooker apps, and I've played snooker, and you get to play other people online. It's great.
Yeah.
And you could choose 5 reds, 10 reds.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I always play the 5 reds.
Yeah.
Let's get to the colours.
But even the outfits, can't we stop wearing tuxedos? Jesus Christ.
Shorts and a Bermuda shorts.
Exactly.
And a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Some people look good in a bow tie, though, and when you do, you have to show it off.
Yeah.
I've got one.
Whoever loses a frame,
yeah,
that person has to take a garment off.
Right?
That's trip sneaker.
That's a great idea. There's a good Bill Werbeneck don't play anymore, isn't it?
Yeah. We wouldn't have known, would
no,
we?
No, no, no.
He could have had speedos on, and we still wouldn't have known if he was still wearing them. It'd have been
an
overhang.
For some reason, you come up with that idea, and straight away I think of Stuart Bingham, which is absolutely horrific to think of.
Listen, I think we're going to campaign for it. Strip snooker.
I think we should.
I
think you've come up with something there.
I might have even played that with someone.
Strip
before.
Snooker. Let's do it.
Strip snooker.
I think if anyone can come up with a theme tune for it, it's yourself.
It's us. Yeah.
Just rewrite the Sven 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 song and see what happens.
Nice link. Like it.
Ryan, thanks for your time, mate. No doubt we'll recap on the final next week.
No worries.
With yourself.
Anytime.
Thanks, Ryan.
Ryan Butler there, journalist for Seven Sport. We've got a sexy snooker up, John.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
So we're going to be talking about the women's football. It's the FA Cup final tomorrow. West Ham v Man City. We're joined by Susie Rack, women's football writer for The Guardian. Women's Cup final tomorrow. How many people will be attending this, Susie?
So hopefully, it should be a record-breaking crowd. It had over 45,000 in it last year, and so far the FA have given out, through sales and complimentary tickets, 52,000 tickets. It'll probably be a little bit of drop-off from that, but They're still selling well, and the signs are really, really good. So it should be a really, really massive crowd.
And who's favourite? Please say West Ham.
I'd love to say West Ham, but,
but they're not.
They'd be very hard pushed to overturn City, who are unbeaten domestically this season. West Ham got a really nice side, and it's really brilliant. They made the final.
What do you mean they got a really nice side? What? Just nice, sort of as in technical footballers, but not as physical.
Well, see, the thing is, they're a very new team, so they only got into the top tier of women's football last season. They moved up from the third tier. They bid to be in the top tier, and were accepted by the FA. And so Matt Beard, who's their manager, he's a brilliant manager. He won the title twice with Liverpool. He won the FA Cup years and years ago with Charlton. He had literally about 6 weeks to put together a team and get a squad together. So it's massively impressive that they made the cup final. And they've got some brilliant players. I mean, they've got three players who played in the cup final last year for Chelsea. They've got a former Manchester City player up front. You know, they've got a really decent team, but they've got a small squad. They're still, you know, so new and coming together it'd be very, very impressive if they managed to overturn City. But anything can happen in the cup final, as we well know.
Yeah, Jack Sullivan is running the West Ham's team, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, I've met him a couple of times, and he's 19 and he's got this BBC show, Britain's Youngest Football Boss, and
to
me, he comes across really, really well.
He does.
Really kind of passionate kids, really, really, kind of see him out leafleting for games and, you know, genuinely wanting to build the club and women's football, and sees it as a really positive thing for the club and the community. So I've been massively, massively impressed with him and what he's done with the club so far this year.
Yeah, we was having this discussion yesterday because I was meant to present this award last night with a couple of the girls from the West Ham team, but obviously they couldn't have a night out two nights before the cup final. And I was just thinking, how would they face the best women's team would beat some of the good, what league or what team? Do they ever get pre-season friendlies against some of the men's teams?
It's been done here and there, mostly internationally. I think Australia have played against boys' youth teams before the national team and things like that, but a long time ago. It's not really done anymore. It's really hard to gauge level, because the thing is the thing about women's football, it's a different game. It's very technical and tactical, but it's not got the physical presence of the men's game. Though England is a more physical game generally, in the same way that it is in men's football. But the thing is you know, top level professionalism is so new. It's only started this year that you can be a full time professional women footballer in the top tier.
Really?
So you've got players who, you know, have had to work full time or part time jobs whilst playing for most of their careers, and they've had to fight for facilities, fight for medical staff and things like that. So it's really hard to compare it to men's football, because, you know, men's professionalism, you know, you look at even kind of lower level of the Premier League, players playing in that, you've still played from kind of five or six in professional environments all the way through their careers and be moulded for it. And we're only for the first time now starting to see those opportunities for women. So men's football is automatically going to be at a kind of more kind of physical and technical level, but the women's game is still very much developing in that way, so it's hard to kind of pinpoint where it would fit in if you kind of try to slot in, say, Arsenal won the league last weekend, into the men's pyramid. But the football they've been playing has been phenomenal. They've been an incredibly exciting team to watch.
I know that some of the kids that are getting signed up early now. They're for the academies, aren't they? Young girls are getting signed up at some of the major clubs.
Yeah, no, like pretty much every big club now. In fact, all the clubs in the top tier have like really, really good academies and really good pathways through, from like playing in school as a kind of 5, 6, 7 year old all the way up through to the first team. What's quite cool is you've got a lot of young players now breaking into the first teams of some of the big clubs that have never kind of really, never had burdens of the kind of previous generation of women players who like they have to work and fight for the right play and things like that. So like Georgia Stanway at Manchester City, she's a brilliant young forward. She won young player, PFA Young Player of the Year. Lauren Hemp, who also plays in that side, again another brilliant young player. Lauren James, she was 16 when she joined Man United at last season. She's 17 now, but she's one of the most technically gifted women footballers I think I've naturally technically gifted footballers I think I've ever seen. There's a little bit of a shift going on at the moment, so it's really exciting to see some of those young players who have through there,
yeah,
from being a little kid up to the top.
What about Kate Longhurst for West Ham? She played in the final before and lost while she was at Chelsea. She'll be looking to put those demons to bed, won't she?
Yeah, so there's a few players that have been in that West Ham side that have got a lot of experience, and I think that's going to really help them. Like I say, Kate's got experience at the top, but Jillie Flaherty, Becky Spencer, and Claire Rafferty all have won the Cup with Chelsea. Jillie Flaherty's won the FA Cup 7 times Chelsea and Arsenal. They've got experience there.
It was Claire Rafferty who was supposed to present the award with me last night, and she she didn't turn up. Oh, where is she? Well, it's 2 nights before a cup final. She can't make it.
Not a bad excuse, really.
Not a bad excuse. Predictions for the final, Susie?
It's hard to look past Man City. I think they probably will win fairly comfortably, but I'd really love to see West Ham get a goal. An upset would be brilliant. I think it'd be fantastic for women's football and fantastic for such a new team.
Yeah. So it's 5:30 tomorrow at Wembley, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, 5:30. And kids are free to go. So it's
kids are free, brilliant.
That's a great opportunity to go down, yeah. Kids are free, adults are £15. So it should be a really good day, you know, being part of a 50,000 crowd watching.
Brilliant.
You know, really exciting football.
Yeah, 50,000 is amazing to get. You know, it's really growing, isn't it? Susie Rack, thanks for your time. Women's football writer for The Guardian, Women's Cup final tomorrow. So if you fancy it, kids are free. 5:30 tomorrow at Wembley. West Ham versus Man City. Come on, you Irons.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to Bell and Sperling. We're just referencing Elton John there because the Watford game this weekend.
I've got your figure for you.
If you bought Elton John's backlog of his catalogue,
right,
for let's say the next 20 years, normally by the PRS, yeah, so you get all the royalties every time it's played on the radio,
yeah,
all these songs.
I'm going for 90 million.
I've gone for 200 million.
Really? You know, Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney, the Beatles only went for about 60.
Yeah, I think.
You reckon 200
million? 200
million.
Because
wow.
I think.
That's incredible.
I think the way things are now, that the amount of outlets, when the Beatles and stuff, when it was sold.
Yeah, but it's less now, though, so.
Well, it's not really. You've got more outlets for things to be played.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even
but,
though.
But the royalties, like Spotify, for example. As we know, when we released our last record, how much was it?
It's 150 plays.
Yeah,
relates to one sale.
Yeah.
So when we sold 72,000 singles in our first week, when we did Top of the Pops, so that's 72,000. Somebody's got to get out of their car, go in Trumps or HMV, and buy the CD. Now, you just download 150 listens counts as one sale.
Yes.
You know, so what I'm saying, it's easy. You ain't got to get out of your car, have you?
No.
You
know? Get out of your car.
We are joined by Charlotte Long now, Entertainment News. Charlotte is going to give us an insight. Did you know that? What do you think of Elton John, first of all, Charlotte? I think she's there, Charlotte.
Charlotte?
Charlotte? What do you think of Elton John?
I'm a big fan of Elton myself, actually.
Great.
Yes, no, we're both huge
fans.
I was, you know, we're both singers, so we were hugely influenced by Elton John. Yeah,
yeah. I thought it was a bit sad when you're talking about his death in 20 years earlier.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I mean, what I was trying to say, you know, in the next 20 years, what will his catalogue generate?
Yeah, that wasn't very nice, Belle, talking about Elton's death.
He knows.
We're all going to die, Charlotte, but hopefully not in the next 80 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon it's more, his music's probably worth more around the 200 million mark.
Wow.
Actually.
Really? Yeah. I went for 90. I must be living in the past.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about Elton in a little while because he's come out and said, my boys are so boyish, they love football and girls. So we're gonna have a good little bit of banter about that.
What about Sophie Turner and Joe Jonas?
Jonas.
Yeah, they're getting...
The Jonas Brothers.
The Jonas Brothers.
Well, Joe Jonas, who I think is the middle Jonas brother, had a surprise wedding this week in Vegas with Sophie Turner, who's Sansa Stark in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And it was a surprise wedding to everyone. It was 2 hours after the Jonas Brothers were on stage performing at the Billboard Awards. And it was one of those little Vegas weddings with an Elvis impersonator doing the vows. And they gave each other rings made out of sweets. It's a nice touch.
Don't you think it's incredible that all these years after Elvis Presley, was he 1977 he died?
Yeah.
So that's incredible that he's still one of the biggest names in entertainment. I mean, still, although he's gone.
People have an impersonator.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's the power of Elvis Presley. Incredible.
And also, with considering all the money they have as well, they're massive celebrities. The wedding cost less than £500, apparently.
No.
I did hear about this. That's right. Wow. Yeah. Less than 500 quid.
Well, I've been to that little area where Elvis got married. It's like a little downtown area. I went to see a show. In fact, I saw the Rat Pack show. It's right by there where that chap. And it really is as it was when Elvis got married.
To Priscilla, of course. I was thinking 1968.
It's like going back in time. Just talk to me. Obviously, they came out of it was the Billboard Awards.
Yeah.
Drake won all these awards.
Yes. He's now a record holder in the amount of Billboard Awards he has. He is 27 now.
Just tell me, do you get Drake? Do you like him, Charlotte?
I'm more of an Elton fan than a Drake fan, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah, do you know what, Charlotte? I think most people are, aren't they?
I've tried to
listen.
It's so mundane.
I know. It's. Well,
I don't know. People love him, though.
They do. My niece, who is 25, she absolutely adores him.
Yeah, I don't get it. I just, there again.
Yeah.
You don't
maybe
get...
we're too old.
Yeah,
no, oh, Charlotte. Stop it. What about this Tolkien movie? About the guy who wrote all those famous
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Mm. What is it? There's some backlash from the writer's family.
Well, yeah, so it's a new film about the writer's life, and it's got Nicholas Holt in it, who I don't know, did you watch About a Boy?
I did.
And it's the little boy in that, Marcus.
No,
he's
and
now
he's
grown up.
Now he's grown up. Well, the one with Hugh Grant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Good film. Plays,
that's one of my favourite films. Yeah. So he's now playing the writer in... Wow. He's playing Tolkien in
that,
the film.
That does make me feel old, Charlotte. Yeah.
So he's playing the writer in the film, but the family of J.R.R. Tolkien have come out to say that they don't approve of the film and they had nothing to do with it, which is sort of awkward for all the co-stars. But they had their UK premiere earlier this week, and we spoke to Nicholas Holt, who plays J.R.R. Tolkien, and he said that they haven't seen the film and he reckons they'd change their mind if they did watch the movie.
So do you think that they should... I mean, the families of these people that they make films out of... I mean, I saw it recently when they did a film about that terrible Jamie Bulger thing. Mm. And they didn't ask the parents. Mm. And they did. I mean, that was awful. I mean, do you think that they should really consult... Or there should be a law, really, that they should consult the family?
I don't know, because sometimes when you get the family involved, it makes the film less true because it's more biased than in a way sort of thing. So maybe sometimes it's actually a good thing when they're not involved, I think.
Yeah, that's the same as writing a biography. Like Kitty Kelly, who wrote the Frank Sinatra biography, His Way. I mean, they absolutely hated it, but it was all true.
Yeah. What about the Amy Winehouse documentary?
No, that was awful.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was shocking.
I mean, it put Mitch Winehouse, it didn't shed a good light on him,
well,
did
no,
it?
Well, no. He wasn't.
Yeah, we know about Mitch Winehouse. Okay, Charlotte, just Line of Duty finale this weekend. Oh, yeah. Now, yes. I've been watching this.
Yes,
and it's, oh, my God, how powerful is it?
Please don't give any spoilers, by the way.
I'm not.
Because I haven't even started it yet.
Okay. But Charlotte, give us half a clue on it.
Well, I think that's the problem of being a fan of Line of Duty, is that you can't read the news or listen to the radio or watch TV without spoilers being about. But there'll be no spoilers here because no one knows who H is.
No.
They're going to find out this Sunday for the finale, which is a special long 1.5-hour episode, where H will finally be revealed after all these years.
Who do you think?
Please don't. No, you can't say it.
No.
Right, I don't know, though. I'm taking my headphones off for this, Charlotte.
Johnny's taking his headphones off.
You talk about it.
This is like, you know, like Mr. and Mrs. where they go in the other room. He's done that. Just, Charlotte, go on. Who do you think is H?
Well, everyone seems to think it's Ted Hastings, but I think that's too obvious, isn't it? Yeah, I reckon so. I reckon it's probably going to be Vicky McClure, actually. Well, the banner in the works.
She's
the main female detective.
Yes, that's who I think.
But I've seen on Twitter, some fans think that it's not one person, it's going to be a few people. So like a group of people are actually H. So it could be anyone, basically. It's been described as the whodunit of the year. It's the most watched show of the year. With 13
Is it over yet?
Not yet, it's not over. Johnny keeps coming back and he's got his fingers in his ear. You know what? What's great about this is the writer, they just keep killing off people that you don't think are going to get killed off, isn't
they? I know. Yeah, Jed Mercurio. He also wrote Bodyguard as well. He's apparently writing the second series for that at the minute. Yeah. He's got his work cut out.
Yeah. Oh, the Bodyguard. I love the Bodyguard. That was another one that you sort of...
Yeah.
You're just sort of waiting for the main character to go. Johnny Spurling, come back in the room.
Thank you.
We've not divulged who anybody... Because nobody really knows.
No, I don't want to know any characters or nothing.
You don't
but
know.
I can tell you one thing that...
No,
most...
Charlotte, stop!
No, it's nothing about the show.
Okay.
It's about the show? It's the most watched show this year with 13.2 million people watching it.
More than the most popular thing. More than the Bodyguard.
Yeah. Quite a lot more, I think.
Yeah, that is quite a lot more than
X Factor, please tell me that.
Oh, yeah, well, X Factor was a... let's just very briefly, Charlotte. X Factor was a big flop this year, wasn't it?
I think so. I didn't watch a single episode, so I'm not...
Neither did I! Do you know why I didn't watch it, Charlotte?
Simon Cowell?
No, I don't mind Simon Cowell. Robbie Williams and his wife.
Why?
No, don't like it.
John's not having Robbie Williams.
First of all, I don't like Robbie Williams. And second of all, what does she know? What does she know? How can she judge people on singing when she... Who is she?
Agreed.
She's Robbie Williams' wife. I did get on my arse. I'm sorry.
I'll just give you half a clue, Charlotte. Robbie Williams came to a gig that we did quite a few years back, and Johnny decided not to talk to him then, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Whoa.
And he came to our gig.
That's
a deep hatred. Do you know what, Charlotte? I like Gary Barlow, but I've got no time for him.
I've got no time for Robbie.
I've got no time for Gary Barlow.
you two should go out and have a drink,
Why have you got no time for him, Charlotte?
I just think he's the most vanilla, boring person out
there.
No,
I agree with that.
Always trying to make everyone like him.
I agree with that, Charlotte. But he does write a decent tune.
He does.
You're right. So does Robbie, though.
No, rubbish.
No.
Robbie has helped. Robbie has helped. Listen, you know the story about angels, don't you? We had two ghostwriters and one co-writer. And the guy who wrote the chorus was an
Ireland,
Irish fella.
Right, yeah.
And he got some money for it.
He got some money. There you go. Charlotte, no doubt we'll have a good chat with you after the weekend at some point next week and have a chat about what happens.
Yes, coming to see us, Charlotte.
And,
I definitely will talk about Line of Duty when it's all out in the open.
We can do what we did with the Elton John figures. We'll write down who we think it is and we'll all confer notes next week. Charlotte Long there. That's brilliant, that.
Yeah.
Charlotte Long from Entertainment News.
Thanks, Charlotte.
It's going to be a great one, John, but you've got to wait. I'd get Sunday out of the way. Why don't you start watching tomorrow?
I'm going to start.
Start watching tomorrow.
I haven't been well. I'm going to start.
Start tomorrow, and
most
then you
definitely.
Might be able to catch up by Sunday.
I like catch up.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Thanks, Michael. You are listening to Bell and Sperling. Johnny Sperling, we've just on those last couple of games.
Yeah.
Chelsea Watford, we didn't get a result. What did we think? Chelsea.
Hey.
Chelsea Watford. Yeah. Chelsea got to stay in the top four.
They haven't they?
They're at home.
I'm gonna go 1-0 to Chelsea.
1-0 Chelsea. Huddersfield Town, Manchester United. Okay, Manchester United
but
got
you
winners.
Know what? Listen. This is big for Man United. Yeah. Although it's against Huddersfield. Yeah. It's grim down
it's
there.
Grim. No water.
But it's going to be even grimmer down Manchester United if they don't win this game or win it by us. If they scrape a win, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
They have got to pulverise Huddersfield. They've really got to punish them. Huddersfield got to take the brunt of all that Manchester United have been through the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I really do think that.
Where are we going?
Oh.
Come on, give me a result. Give me go big on the result.
I'm going to go big on the result, am I?
Go 4. Go 3-4.
I'm going to go 4-0 Manchester United. I really hope they do it, but I don't think they will. That's what I don't think. I don't think they will.
Typical Spurs.
No, I'm going 4-0.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to do it.
Arsenal.
I don't think they're good enough, boy.
All right. I totally agree with you.
Go on.
Arsenal against Brighton.
Now, Arsenal.
Okay, but Brighton need to win this.
Yeah, they do. But stay up. It's 3-0 Arsenal.
If Brighton win this...
3-0 Arsenal.
Right, 3-0. 3-0 Arsenal. Seriously, 3-0?
3-0.
Really?
3-0. Remember that?
Yeah.
What was that? No. 3. 3.
Yeah.
No, it's 3. It was 3-0.
Who was that?
That was...
What's his name? Mourinho. Mourinho.
I couldn't even think of his name.
Who was that?
I was Jordan Paul.
3-0.
3. No, 3. Nil.
Yeah, what's the matter?
3-0.
You can't say it. 3-0 to Arsenal against Brighton. Brighton desperately need to win that.
Yes.
If they win that, they stay up.
I don't think they're good enough either.
Okay. On Monday night, Manchester City versus Leicester City. Now, for me, this is
a big one. It's a big one, and Leicester City do step up.
And I think, listen, Vardy was frightening the other day.
He was.
And I think Leicester City could... Could
I think they could too. I think I'll get a draw. Only a 2-1.
No, come on, let's have a
2-1 Leicester.
Let's go for a draw, John.
Well, don't tell me what to go for.
No, but because we've got to put this into the Love Sport.
Well, that's what I'm going 2-1 Leicester. I'm having it.
Okay, 2-1 Leicester. Okay, 2-1 Leicester. I think it's going to be a draw.
Okay.
If I'm honest.
All right.
We're at the bottom of the leaderboard.
Are we really?
On the Love Sport thing. On the predictions. That's why I thought, let's go.
Let's try and
be nice.
Yeah, but live on air, you were telling me to go against what I was thinking.
Yeah, but should we just go 1-1 for Leicester against Man City?
So we get points. Oh, I see. Do we not get our own predictions?
No, we've got a Bell and Sperling prediction.
Oh, you're joking. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought we had at least a separate one.
No.
All right, go with yours then.
Go with 1-0.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, 1-0.
I'll compromise with you.
Leicester City versus Manchester City, 1-0. Now, that is going to be the spanner in the works. That's going to be the one.
Yeah. I bet I'm right. Yeah. If I'm right, if I go 2-1, I'm not talking to you all day.
Well, I'll be happy if you're right, because I want Liverpool to win the Prem.
Okay.
Over
Manchester.
Yeah,
I do, yeah.
So there you go. Okay, we was going to try and get George Moncur on.
Still can't get him.
Still can't get him. It's only third time of trying.
I know.
We're better off getting John.
He's dead.
Get John Moncur.
His dad comes on. There's a right laugh with
us. We've had John on. So
come on, George, pick the phone up.
I'll speak to John Moncur over the weekend and we'll get John on for next week. And he can get his son on the phone and go, "You're a naughty boy."
Yeah.
"You're a very naughty boy." Just talk to me very quickly, John, about this Elton John story.
What can I tell you about
it? I'm going to tell you. Elton John's come out and said, "My boys are so boyish, they love football and girls."
You think he's pleased about that? I think he is, isn't he?
Listen, I've told you. My meeting with Elton John, when I met Elton John...
Yeah.
He only wanted to say, he briefly spoke about music, but he wanted to talk about football.
Yes.
He wanted to ask me about West Ham.
Well, you know why, didn't you?
Go on.
Because Teddy Sheringham was with you.
Yeah, well,
he wanted to show off in front of Ted, didn't he?
He knew statistics and everything.
That was incredible about footballers. And also, being around Teddy Sheringham for many, many times that we were around him at parties and stuff, and where fans could interact with him and people, it's incredible that years ago, I mean, you think about years ago, your pop star and film stars were footballers, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as I always said, Terry Venables, Jimmy Greaves got the bus to the game.
Yeah.
Then the bus home. Mm. I mean, that's they were in the top teams. Mm. That's how much football's changed.
The pop stars.
Oh, they're more than that.
In fact,
they're royalty almost.
Pop stars are on the train now.
pop star they are, though.
On the bus, yeah.
It's very true.
Look at Ed Sheeran. He looks like he couldn't afford a new pair of trousers.
He looks like he's just been on the bus.
He does.
Looks like he drives the bus.
Drives the bus, yeah, exactly. But you know what I love about this story? He says, my boys love football and they like girls.
Oh, bless
now,
him.
I'm going to tell you something. When my first born was my daughter Persia.
Yes.
And it's great. I already said.
She doesn't like football.
She came over West Ham a couple of times.
Yeah, but she's not like, you know, a football fan.
But I always said, I want a boy because I want him to play football.
Now, my boy. He's joined the team.
There you go. I want him to play football and I want him to like nightclubs and I want him to like girls and I want him to be a lad.
Well, hang on a minute. He's only 10.
But let me
the nightclubs bit hasn't come yet.
I don't mind if he tries it soon. I don't care. But, you know, when he was born, I did say to someone, I said, let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
If he don't like football,
right,
he can go back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it was incredible. So he was my second ball. The fact that he loves football, you know, and his life has been football, it is wonderful.
Yeah.
That I'm part of that.
Absolutely.
But you had the other side of it as well, where it's a bit of a nightmare because he's saying,
of course.
Do you think I played well? And I go, well, I think you played well. And he goes, you don't, do you? And we have arguments about it.
Mind you, though, Alan Carr's dad must have thought the same thing.
Yes.
He must have thought, I'm having a boy.
Yeah.
For you, know, he's going to...
He's never kicked a ball.
Look how that turned out.
Because he was a footballer, wasn't he?
He's a coach at Newcastle. Yes.
Well, there you go. We'll talk about it. We're going to see you Tuesday.
We're not here Monday.
We've got
bank holiday Monday. But we will certainly be back. This has been the Bell and Sperling Show. Let's have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. Good bank holiday. We'll see you Tuesday.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.